Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Ethics Experts. I'm your host, Giovanni Gallo, and I'm excited to feature today Adam Balfour. For anyone who's a first-time listener, welcome to the show. And anyone who is a repeat listener or subscriber, how you doing there? Welcome to the show. And you see that? That's what you get with the Ethics Experts. If you subscribe, you get an extra welcome at the beginning of every show because we love you. Adam is the Vice President and General Counsel for Corporate Compliance and Latin America at Bridgestone Americas. Adam, we're so glad to have you on the show, man.
No, thanks for having me, Gio. Really, really pleased to be here and to talk with you today.
So we're going to go into some cool stuff today, especially around, you did a really interesting I think inspiring Compliance Week recently. So we want to get into some of that, but really a lot of the core of what we do here on the Ethics Experts is to tell the personal side of ethics. And what better way to start with that, Adam, than to talk about you and your career. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be in the position that you're at and how you came to be in this this profession.
Sure. So kind of interesting. I feel like a lot of people in compliance, this wasn't really a long-term aspiration, right? This wasn't something I'd necessarily planned. I think kind of luck and guidance from some mentors kind of really brought me to this. So I started my career, worked in New York for about 7 or so years for big law firms doing finance, doing securities deals. And then we decided, look, we're done with New York, wanting to move somewhere else. And the opportunity with Bridgestone came up. So I've been at Bridgestone now for about 7 years, had a couple of different roles. Last 5 years or so, been covering Latin America. And then the last couple of years, moved more and more into compliance. So I find it fascinating. It was not an area that I thought I'd be interested in. But the more I get into it, the more I'm like, this is really incredible. It's interesting work. It's I think just so important what we get to do in compliance, and I really enjoy it a lot. So very happy to be in my role.
That's great, man. Yeah, I just love hearing the paths that people take to it because, like you said, this is, you know, not a lot of people spent 30 years kind of, you know, I hope when I grow up, I'm going to be in compliance. Right. But you know, I like the way that you put it. I think you said that it's interesting and it's important. And I think that mix of there's some kind of thorny challenges for us to handle. And there's ultimately like a really good impact on the lives of people if we do this right. You know, I just kind of hear that over and over as something that draws people that draws people into the profession.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think people often look at compliance and think it's about rules.
Yeah.
And the rules are important, but it's really about people. It's about helping people, helping your employees just do the right thing. And so I think when you see it that way, it becomes so much more interesting. It's not just dealing with rules or dealing with laws or policies. It's fundamentally about people. And that's what I think is really engaging about. And I find other people enjoy compliance. They like people. They want to help people. And that's what you got to do in compliance.
Yeah, I think it's so true. And if we can just jump right into it, I think what you brought up was it reminded me of something that you did. I think it was around your Compliance Week, or maybe it was just around your general communication campaign. You've been kind of relating compliance to some other things in life that are more relatable to people, one of those being parenting. Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, because there are rules that we put forth in parenting, right? You know, don't stab your sister or whatever the rules are in your house. There's obviously a much bigger game that we're playing as parents. It's not just making rules for our kids. So tell us a little bit about how you did that tie-in and how it went over with the Bridgestone team.
Yeah, so I think for a lot of people understand compliance is important, but then it's what does compliance really mean? And I think to a lot of people, compliance can feel like this foreign abstract idea that's really hard to understand. So that's why I find like a lot of people will agree compliance is incredibly important, but then they're gonna, you know, quietly ask, well, what does compliance even mean? Because it's different at every organization. And so one of the ways that I've tried to explain it is, you know, rather than sitting down and giving someone a presentation for 45 minutes or an hour about here's our compliance pillars and what this means, it's trying to find a way that people can relate to what can I do that's going to be relevant and resonate with people. So kind of like you mentioned, Gio, I kind of like to explain compliance through parenting, right? I mean, you've got leadership, risk assessment, standards and control, training, communication, monitoring, and responding. So is how do you be a parent, right? It's not just simply, you know, talking to your kids about doing the right thing. It's your actions matter more than what you say. And then when it comes to things like risk assessments, I mean, my family, we live right beside a park. So we're often going to the park and they're playing on the different playground things. And every day is a different day. Maybe it's been raining the day before, so things are a little bit wet and slippery, or maybe they're tired. There's bigger kids around. So you're constantly doing, you know, assessing for the risks. And then standards and controls. Yep. No stabbing of your brother or sister. That's definitely one of the rules in our household as well.
But, okay. You too. You know, all right, great.
Yeah, it's a pretty common one, I think, nowadays, hopefully. But it's like, what are those expectations for behavior? And then I think training and education, even something as simple as potty training, right? I mean, we teach our kids. We want them to understand our values, talk about those things. And certainly for them to speak up if something's wrong. And then monitoring, responding, you know, I kind of like to use the internal investigation I had that was involved extreme emotions and, you know, concerns about retaliation. And it's like the matter of who had Mickey Mouse first, right? Of all the soft toys we have in our house, there's always a fight over who had Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, when you start to explain to people, you know, think about compliance like parenting, or whether you're an aunt or an uncle or whatever it is, everyone's got kids that they can relate to in their life. Yeah. And when you think about it that way, and then you kind of layer on top, you know, what compliance means in terms of those pillars, I think it just makes it much, much easier for people to understand and relate to. So that's kind of like why I think that the parenting model works sometimes, doesn't work every time, but I think by and large, it's something that universally people can relate to.
Yeah. And I think it's a great thing about the way that you've gone about, you know, publicizing and communicating about your compliance program, because it's not just one angle, right? If you're just talking about parenting all the time, people would be like, okay, you're not my dad. Like, don't tell me what to do. But it's one angle and, you know, you've helped people see a bunch of different angles on it. And I'm excited to get into that. But, you know, I think it's cool how you bring up, you know, there are these, you know, there's these different pillars, but we need to translate those into, you know, the minds and the hearts of the people around us, because, you know, I think that everyone's getting better at this, but, you know, let's, you know, just say 10 years ago for a lot of people to kind of take the stink away from it. You know, there was a time before that maybe we all kind of lived within our own walls too much, and we saw compliance for what it is for us. We're managing a program. We're concerned about this risk. Well, on the other side of that table is someone else who's on your team, and they see compliance as part of this lattice work of everything that they have to do. They have to get innovation done and customer service and growth and whatever it is. And compliance is one of those things. And I think you do a great job translating compliance into those layman terms and making it not this thing of like the Department of No is coming to like shut you down, but just, hey, we're trying to help with this and we have a way to contribute to the mission that we're all trying to contribute to.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because, you know, while most organizations, you've got a compliance team, it's we can't do everything, right? I mean, sure. We're not the ones who are facing the risks or involved in sales, doing everything. So it's, how do we communicate? How do we work with those people? And it can be a challenge, but it's the more that you invest that time to really get past, and I've kind of talked about this before, like, how do you get past brand awareness to really try to make compliance something that's relevant and resonates with people? It's not always easy to do, but I think when you can do that, you just help people understand the why. That's really, I think, a worthwhile investment of time and effort that you can make.
Yeah, it's great. And you know, you were talking about the playground, and you know, I have some young kids too, so I'm like, you know, should I stop? Should I spot them? Is it okay? It's fine. So I get that. But you know, there's this interesting thing that I think is a parallel, because I really love this parenting parallel, where like when we're managing our kids, we're not trying to take away all risk, right? Because there's something they teeter on the, you know, the balance beam, but they don't fall off. So there was some risk there, but it didn't go badly. And there's some of that that we do within our organizations, right? There's, you know, it's impractical and, you know, and also ineffective to say that, okay, we're going to make sure that nothing ever even has the potential of going wrong. But it's this, I think it's part of this compliance 3.0 phase that we're moving into, where it's not just about defensiveness and legal defensibility. It's not just about, hey, we have a program and it's efficient, but we're moving into, okay, what is the right way to kind of, you know, be effective, really? And it's in the DOJ guidelines, and it's kind of all over the place. It's the frontier that we're all pushing toward. But it's this thing of, you know, I can't keep everything bad from happening. So I have to kind of find the hot spots. And more than me finding them, I have to empower my team to understand what that balance is. And that's too far. And this is a gray area that we should talk about. And that's fine. Go ahead and run with it. And I think a lot of what you're doing through Compliance Week and these other things help people see compliance in its full context instead of this just yes, no, or, you know, maybe just no decision.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, there's definitely times when you got to say no, right? But I think it's if you're constantly saying no, your credibility is just shot, right? No one's going to want to work with you. But I think for any organization, any company, you've got to be willing to take some risks.
Yeah.
And I think this mindset of, you know, we can never take risk, or the compliance professional, the attorney who almost prides themselves on being risk averse. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that the truly risk averse professional is like your CEO's best friend, because I think you're able to understand risk in its entirety of, you know, there's risks if you do something, there's risks if you don't, but you're not just looking at the legal risks. Again, of course, there's some things that, you know, there's no cost benefits analysis with, but
yeah, the stabbing like, your sister type things.
The stabbing your sister, the paying bribes, you know, all of those antitrust violations, but there's other things where, you know, you've got to be able to have an understanding of the different risks, not just from your area. I think if you do that, it's incredibly siloed. It's not helpful. And people will find ways around. You know, and I think we want it to be that compliance is a department of the organization that really should be at the heart of everything your organization is doing. But you've got to have people coming to you. You've got to have people who are able to make those informed decisions, who are there living with the risk.
Yeah.
But they also know, okay, this seems too much of a risk, or I need help, I need guidance. How do we build those networks? How do we build those communications so that it feels, frankly, psychologically safe for people to come to compliance and not feel like Adam's going to shoot me down, or he's going to be like, what on earth would you think that's why would that be okay to even ask that? We've got to make it safe for people to bring topics to us and be willing to discuss the risks.
Yeah, it's great, man. I mean, I think it's so intelligent and thoughtful the way that you approach it, because you know, you said earlier that if you're always saying no, then, you know, your credibility shot. And I think part of that is you have to be in those conversations where you can say yes, right? So if you're only catching when someone's way off the road and they're in the ditch and they need a tow truck and you're never a rumble strip or, you know, hey, get in the next lane or something, if there's not that psychological safety for someone to say, hey, I think this is probably fine, but, you know, is there something that is going to be a problem 6 months from now? Or, you know, if people aren't coming to you because they have that psychological safety, you know, if a lack of that safety is causing them to not come to you in those gray areas, then you're just finding out when there's a 4-alarm fire and you're like, all right, well, this is definitely terrible. So, you know, you guys were wrong to do this or whatever. And that's not the dynamic that we want. It's also not the dynamic that leads us to manage risk. It puts us in a very reactive, reactionary mode.
Yeah, I don't want to be in firefighter mode, right? Where you're always having to put out the fires, or you're getting brought in so late, or, you know, even if you're brought into those meetings, are you able to understand the conversation that's happening? And I think that's where you've really got to be able to understand the business to truly appreciate the risks and try and say, okay, like, how do we come up with a solution? Or maybe you can't do this, but have you considered this? But I think you've really got to understand what the conversation is, not just simply what people are trying to do, but ultimately, why does your business or organization want to do what it is they're trying to do?
Right.
And I think if you can kind of peel back and get to that layer, it gives you so many more options to work with them and really try and partner with the business to grow the business, but grow it in the right way and in a way that's aligned with your ethics and compliance program.
Yeah. That's great, man. So let's jump in and talk a little bit about some of the things that you did during Compliance Week. So, you know, this will probably air like a month or so after Compliance Week. And, you know, but I think the lessons, you know, there are things that you did that are appropriate for a big push like Compliance Week. And then there are principles within all of these things that can make it into our communication throughout the year and our interactions. So I want to go over some of these things because I think they were creative. I think they put, you know, kind of a different face on the compliance team than kind of, you know, the stuffy buttoned up office of no. So let's start with, you know, this is probably the most fun one. Let's start with the Battle Royale.
Yeah, so the battle royale, and I have to point out and state the obvious, but it is far from just me or the compliance team that pulls this together. I mean, we have got a small but mighty great team, and then we have people in the law department, communications. So truly a team effort in putting this together. But
which is a key to this whole thing, right? Which, like, it's something that we're talking about a lot. Like, you got to get out of your silo and you got to go reach out to marketing or communications, or, you know, like, part of doing this well is not doing it on your own. And, you know, I think it's evident by you bringing it up from the start that, like, to do this well, it's got to involve some other people.
Right. But even simple things, I mean, we're a huge organization. How do I get a message out to everyone in the organization that has an email address? I don't know how to do that. Uh-huh. So it's like, if you work with your communications team, they'll figure out, okay, here's the right means to do this. Here's the right timing. So it's really, it takes so much planning and so much, effort to pull this off. It's a little bit like a wedding, right? I mean, it's over before you know it, but the amount of time and effort that goes into this and planning. But the Battle Royale, this is our second year of hosting the Battle Royale. And so we had been using Kahoot for about a year or so before. We just launched our first ever global code of conduct in 2018. So we wanted to find a way, how can we make compliance more engaging? How can we, kind of test people's knowledge in a way that it's not going to feel like an exam? But we can also, frankly, push our agenda of, you know, here's some of the things we want people to know about, or we can make people aware of. So essentially what the Battle Royale is we, inspired by, I think, March Madness, you know, we put together a 16-team bracket of different departments in the company. And it was over the space of 4 days, daily head-to-head quizzes using five questions, which we call them like a battle. And so it was a daily eliminator round, or daily eliminator style. And people just really got into it. I mean, we had people high-fiving each other in last year, not this year.
Last year, in 2019.
In the old world, right?
The BC before COVID.
Right, exactly. And people just really got engaged. And we had some other things where we used this online tool to put the bracket together. And we didn't plan for this, but it seeded all the teams. And very few people actually asked us, how did you come up with the ranking? But there was a lot of discussion around the ranking about, you know, why was marketing the number three team? Or, you know, this team was number 16. So it was just a great way, I think, to get people engaged, to make compliance and ethics fun, really by, I think, successfully gamifying the experience, but not just doing a training or something else and then trying to put it in a very simple format and saying it's a game, but it really was something that people got engaged in. So it was a lot of fun. We got some great data from it. And I think just the feedback and engagement was a huge success. So we brought it back this year. Obviously, with COVID, there were certainly some changes, but
Did it in the bubble with no one in the stands.
That's exactly right. everyone was using virtual technology to kind of bring people together. But we also did something where we called it, you know, wear your compliance collars, win with integrity. So we assigned each of the teams, look, here's your sports collars. And so we encourage them, like, wear your compliance colors, almost like a soccer match or football match, whatever, right, whatever sport you like. And, you know, some people really engaged in that. And it was kind of a fun way to see, people coming together to see, you know, how does, you know, being competitive in compliance, people don't think of compliance and competition being so closely related.
Right.
But it was a really fun experience that I think people enjoyed. And we had a lot of fun watching it as well, for sure.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's this counterintuitive thing, I think, but, you know, as we get, I think, more comprehensive and we kind of get out of our compliance bubble and be the contributor to a full company ethics program that we all want to be and know we can be, it's going to be this different type of thing, right? It's not just doing 15 more trainings throughout the year. It's how do we reinforce that a different way? How do we bring this into the conversation and get people to relate this to this in a new context? And it's kind of this counterintuitive thing that making it fun and being less serious makes it more effective. It's not like we don't just need to pound, you know, we're just going to read the code of conduct to everybody for 2 hours. That's not going to be effective, but, you know, making it fun, putting some competition in there, you know, getting people to, you know, root for their team and stuff. It seems like you guys had some fun with it. And I think it's cool to just think about, like, what different like neural pathways, if I can geek out a little bit, are built for someone to be in this different context, thinking about compliance challenges in this, you know, in this team environment, instead of like locked in their office, taking a, you know, an e-learning course or something. It starts making this part of the culture instead of just part of that thing you have to do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it was one of my tips I did a while ago, kind of joking that, you know, someone saying like, I really enjoyed the training you gave where you talked about the legislative history of the FCPA. I mean, it's like no one is going to, or people may remember that training for how bad it was, but otherwise no one is going to remember that. And so, you know, how do you connect with people if it's at an emotional level? Can you get people's dopamine going? But what can you do to trigger a different response from people? Doing more and more training, that's maybe not the answer. If it's not going to be effective, it's not going to sit well with people. So I think it is trying to think about, you know, how can I make this engaging? How can I make it fun? How can I actually include some questions in there that, you know, maybe people don't have access to that information. Now they're asking for that, you know, hey, can we get more information about compliance? Can we get more data relating to the hotline? How do we change it? So instead of us just trying to push our agenda, you've actually get people in the business and the organization trying to pool. They want more information. They want more data. That helps us in compliance, right? We want them to be more informed. For them, it's like, how do I do better next year in the compliance battle royale? So it's trying to kind of pull these different concepts together in how do you make that work and make it a success.
Yeah, it's great, man. I think it's a creative way to do it. I think it's great of you. You know, I meant to bring this up earlier. I love that you're coming on the show. I love the way that you contribute on LinkedIn and you contribute at conferences. I think it embodies part of what this industry and this profession is about, is we're all trying to kind of tackle this beast in our own way within our own companies. And it's great the way that you share this and you say, hey, here's the playbook, here's what we did, just so someone can pick it up and run with it. I appreciate you contributing here on our The Ethics Expert Show and the way that you contribute in all those different ways, Adam.
No, I appreciate that. But I do think that's one of the great things about, you know, the compliance community. And I really do think it's a community where, you know, people want to help each other. No one's sharing confidential information or anything like that, but it's like, here's what worked or here's what didn't work.
Yep.
And I think LinkedIn and other tools like that, or the conferences, they're great. Or even I attended one virtual conference not too long ago where, you know, they had tremendous speakers, but there was also a chat function going, and just the dialogue, the engagement, people just want to help other people in this profession. And so I think you do that, you know, as well with your podcast and all the other stuff that Compliance Lane does. I see, we both have a copy of Sending the Elevator Back Down on our desk. I see that. Yeah. So, you know, you see, I get mine sitting right here as well. So
yeah, exactly.
You know, you see so many people in this area who are just doing so much more than I've done, or frankly, I'll ever do. But it's kind of being inspired by some of those people. What can I do to try and help other people or just share ideas? It's really, really great. I'm a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun, man. And it's cool. Like, you know, there are probably other professions where this happens somewhat, but there are a lot of places where people are more competitive across company lines. And, you know, I think it's cool how within compliance and ethics, we all know that we're all trying to, you know, get this solved and take care of people. And if I can give you a tip that helps you do that better, that doesn't make things harder for my company.
Right, right. I lose nothing by sharing ideas. It's you gain, you help others for sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Star Wars panel, another fun one. How did that go?
That was another fun one. We'd hoped to do that on May 4th on Star Wars Day, but of course this year that didn't happen.
Yeah, so that was tough this year.
It really was. So it was another way in which we thought, look, you know, how do we talk to people about the importance of leadership, the importance of feedback, pressure, goal setting, you know, standards and various things. How do we do that without having, you know, 10 lectures and without it just being boring and dull?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had I was not on this panel. I'm a Star Wars fan, but I don't think my knowledge is good enough to really be on the panel. But we had some cross-functional leaders and some of our other teammates who understand the movies, understand these concepts, and just, you know, dressed up in character, really kind of embraced it. And we're able to pull lessons from the movies and also just kind of general concepts that touch upon compliance or HR issues, and just deliver in a way that it immediately people get it. It just resonates with people. So it was so much fun. I was so impressed, so proud of the team that did that. They put a lot of work and effort into it, and the final product was just absolutely fantastic. It really was.
That's cool. You know, those are topics that you wanted to talk about, you know, leadership, feedback and stuff like that, but just putting into that context, you don't lose anything. Maybe there's a little bit of extra effort of, you know, you got to tell people to get their Wookiee costumes out or something like that, but it ends up making it so much more effective and engaging and interesting and memorable that it's definitely worth the extra effort to do that instead of, you know, here's a video lecture on leadership.
Yeah. Or even just, you know, what would you do with a high performer in your organization? Well, if you then talk about Anakin and what could have been done to save Anakin from turning to the dark side, it becomes so much more interesting, right?
Right.
And so it's how do you find a way that you can deliver so much more content in a much shorter amount of time than if you were to cover each of those topics individually, and it just becomes less dry. It's a lot of fun. So now we're in the tough position of, you know, that was a huge hit. We had about, I'm going to say about 600 people dialed in for that event. I don't know what movie series we're going to do next year. So,
what if you did like Pixar movies, they got a bunch of lessons in that. And there's a pretty wide range you could do there.
There's some Pixar movies for sure. I think there's a lot of like TV comedy shows where there's things that they're great comedies. But there's some pretty horrific things happen in some comedy. So what can you do? You know, what can you do there to kind of draw on pop culture or anything else that just will serve as an effective vehicle to help explain these concepts in a way that's going to be relevant and resonate with people. So that is a lot of fun. I get to watch movies or TV shows and claim I'm working, and it's okay working on the weekends when you're watching Star Wars or other things.
That's cool, man. It's a great way to do it. And I also know that you worked, you know, there was some direct company tie-in where in that Star Wars panel, you worked lessons from Bridgestone's past into it. And I like that you did that because it's, you know, you kind of, there's the, like, this is compliance and these are the laws and these are the policies, right? And on one side, there's this pop culture that you're kind of tying everyone into. And on the other side, there's this, well, this is our culture. This is our company. And this is our family that we live in. And I thought it was really cool how you tied that in to make it, this is not just about compliance. This is about compliance at Bridgestone.
Yeah, I think that's so important because it's one, it shows, look, every organization has issues, right?
Yeah.
And so I think one is when you use those examples, it's a great way of showing that speaking up actually makes a difference. And it's not just simply people speaking up, it's that your organization listens. But I also think, and I do this as well, but it's like, I like to use the headlines of, you know, this company fined billions of dollars, or, you know, this CEO was fined, you know, however many millions of dollars and sent to jail. But for most of your employees, you know, if they're looking at a CEO who's paying a fine of millions of dollars, that I can't connect with that, right? I mean, it's like, I'm never going to find myself in that position. So if I can use examples, either of, you know, some sort of wrongdoing or where someone spoke up and it provided a benefit for doing so, I think that's often far more effective for people. And it just, again, it resonates with people more so than, you know, unknown CEO at another company did something wrong. The headlines are helpful, but, you know, when you can kind of show this is what happens in our house, It really does make an impact on people for sure.
That's great, man. I love how you did that, and it shows a level of cogency with this whole thing that you understand. Here's what we have to do. Here are a bunch of people who may not understand it yet, and you got to build a bridge between that. And you bring some real creative ways into that.
Yeah, no, it is. It is really about building that bridge. I like the way you kind of describe it as a bridge. That's what it is.
So another piece of your compliance week this year was you had a leadership panel and you guys broke the bank, or you hit capacity on your conference line because so many people wanted to jump into that. So, you know, I don't know if that's impressive to anybody else, but, you know, you basically sold out the whole concert for this leadership panel, which is, you know, a great thing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were a little bit worried. I mean, with it's in past years, it's always easier. You know, you can go around the office and, hey, that event's coming up. Make sure you're going to be there.
Right.
You can get a sense of is the room filling up or not. And so there was, I must admit, I was genuinely concerned beforehand. I was like, I really hope we get 300 people join this. And I was worried. I was like, what if we get 10 people? Like, what if our messaging hasn't been effective? And so, you know, when I logged into the session and one of my colleagues, Sam, you know, she was kind of monitoring how many people were in the meeting, and she sent me a note, and I was like, my goodness, we had, I think it was 1,097 people. And so that maxed out our conference call system. And so we had a number of other people who we heard from that just weren't able to make it to the session. So I went from being kind of nervous about, you know, how many people were going to join to being ecstatic. And it was a fantastic panel. I mean, I had some questions, but our panel, it was our CEO, our CFO, or our chief HR officer, and one of our external directors. I've never had an easier job than that panel.
Okay.
You know, I would ask a question, and then they would just share their genuine and sincere and really well thought ideas. And so just, it made my job just ridiculously easy. And it's so compelling, and I think has such an impact on people when it's not just Adam or the compliance team or the law department talking about this. It's really is tone at the top.
Yep.
And I think, you know, any actions or change in mentality, change in culture, if the CEO talks about it, or, you know, one of your other executive officers or one of your external board directors, that's when the message is really received that this is important. This is something that truly matters. And so it was a great event. We did something similar last year. I think was another, you know, just great way for our employees to hear from senior leadership. And something we were tremendously proud of, just our continued commitment and engagement by leadership just makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, that's great, man. And it's cool to hear that it was so easy for you to lead that panel, right? Well, maybe it's because you're a great moderator.
No.
But, you know, it seems like you have that tone at the top, right? These people that you brought on, they get it. They understand the context. They want to drive, you know, the leaders at Bridgestone want to drive forward a culture where, you know, people are treated properly and people are treated fairly. And there's not a bunch of misbehavior that's driving performance, but it's actually authentic integrity that's driving the company forward. And it's great to have that as, you know, one of the arrows in your quiver of like, all right, and, you know, we're going to bring the leadership on. So it's great that you have a leadership team that cares that much. You know, you had made a comment that, you know, it seems strange to you that more other companies don't do this. I wonder if, you know, I'd like to hear why you think that is, but, you know, I wonder if it feels like it's higher stakes than just, you know, well, we're going to send training out and we're going to send an email out. And then I'm not really on the line for it because there is some of that performance anxiety, right? Like, hey, I got the CFO and the CEO and, you know, these two other leaders on, you know, I better kind of pack the room for them or I'm wasting their time, or I'm telling everybody about this event, it better be good. Do you think that kind of like, I wonder if that's going to, you know, I wonder if we're not going to perform well enough keeps people back from it, or do you think it's other stuff?
It could be that. I mean, I think it could be a whole host of reasons, but I think oftentimes people may wonder, you know, can I bother the CEO about this? Or, you know, would it be better for us to send out an email? Because then we've got a documented record that, you know, this email that the CEO probably didn't draft, didn't write, has sent it out. And so I think there's probably a variety of reasons, and I'm sure there's some reasons are more legitimate than others, right?
Yeah.
And of course, your C-suite incredibly busy and hard to get on their agenda.
Sure.
But it's something I do think for companies, if you've got the leadership that engages, that gets compliance, if you can get them involved, or, you know, we've had some of our leaders, they recorded videos on their cameras, on their laptops, and I think just showed a level of kind of just genuineness about, you know, how we're all in this situation together. They recorded on their phone. And just sending out those messages is absolutely key. So I think there's probably a variety of reasons as to why some people struggle, but it's just something that, not that I've done a whole lot of, you know, research into who's doing this and who's not, but I think the more that people can get leadership panels going and you know, talking to their employees, But it's got to be sincere. It's got to be genuine. I think there's nothing worse than the kind of the phony corporate videos where, you know, people just repeatedly talk about your employees as being your greatest asset. But then when it comes to them kind of like speaking up or there's issues, they're not treated that way. And I think people can see through that very, very quickly.
Yep.
And so I think if you are going to do these events, it's you've got to have the right panel and you've got to have people who are going to share their honest and real thoughts and really be genuine and passionate. Otherwise, I think people will see through it and can maybe have a kind of counter impact that you might not want it to have.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's something that, you know, I think that people don't realize sometimes is that people see through that. If they're hearing all the time that, you know, we love you, you're the best. And then they're getting this dissonance of that's not how they're treated. You know, I've been doing like these little videos about branding. And, you know, I think it's apropos to that people pick up a brand from what they experience, not what you tell them that it's going to be like, right? And it's the same thing, you know, there's branding around the compliance program and the whole company and the employee relations program or whatever, but you're not going to overcome a bunch of behavior that indicates that your heart is in one direction with an email from that has a fake CEO signature at the bottom that says, you know, we care about this and it's great. And you have to live it out. And, you know, I think that some of the ways that you're doing this of, you know, the leadership panel, the engagement around making compliance more relatable shows that this is not just a check the box, hey, we got to do it, so let's do it for the regulators, but this is something that makes a difference to Bridgestone. I think it's really cool how you make it come alive like that.
Yeah, and you've got to, because I think there's nothing where I get so frustrated. Let's say I'm calling a company or I'm trying to call customer support, and you know you're in line, and the recorded message says, you know, you're so important to us as a company, you know, as a customer, you know, please hold for the next available rep. And when I'm on a call for like on hold for 20 minutes, I don't feel that important, right? I get that the message is telling me that you know the customer is important, but the way that you're treated, it makes you really question. Like, I don't think I am. Yeah. So I think it is, how do you make sure you've got that genuine, sincere communications around this, because people pick up on it very quickly when it's not sincere.
Yeah, it's almost like you got to walk the walk before you talk the talk, because I tend to think that it's worse to have that statement saying you're really important to me and then showing you the opposite than to not say anything at all.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, you'd be better to stay silent and send out that message because it's yeah, people will see through that very quickly. And then everything after that, you know, is really going to be questioned. Are they giving me the real story here, or are they not? So it's, you got to be genuine for sure.
Yeah. And you know, so now not only am I not appreciated, now I think you're lying to me, and it breaks right down that trust. And that trust is so central to everything we're trying to do in ethics.
Right.
So we were talking about the leadership panel, and, you know, I brought up, why don't people do it, just, you know, to try to, you know, not to admonish anybody for not doing it, but to try to think, like, is there a real blockage, right? If your CEO hates compliance, you probably shouldn't put them on a panel. But if it's, you know, with your team and you're like, all right, well, I've never really asked, let me try to ask and see if I can get on his calendar sometime in the next 3 months and have him be on a, you know, half hour panel and just get started with it. Is there something that's holding us back from doing it? If it's external to us, you got to kind of work around it. But I anticipate that there are some things that, like, yeah, we've just never tried it because, you know, it kind of seems, you know, maybe hard to pull off or whatever. And, you know, you're living proof that it went over great.
Yeah, I think I would struggle to work at a company if the CEO or other executive said, I can't invest an hour of my time per year.
Right.
That to me would just, I wouldn't like that as an employee. I feel like in compliance, that would just make my job so much harder to do. And I think it's just a case of scheduling, right? If you contact someone ahead of time, I'm willing to bet that the CEOs and other executives of other big companies, they're going to say yes. It's just a matter of, yeah, figure it out, get on my schedule and make it work. That's the hardest part. But if someone's reluctant to be on that panel, yeah, that would give me concern for sure.
Yeah, it's a little red flag for you. But, you know, even with we're doing so much stuff that's asynchronous and over Zoom and all of that stuff, you know, hey, can you record a 2-minute video saying, you know, or a 10-minute talk about how this is important or something? There's probably a way to work into that.
Yeah, no, I think there is. I think there's so much you can do with technology now. I mean, one of the things I want to look at for next year is what we're calling Integrity in 5. So it's can can you do almost something like this where it's a very short, you know, 5-minute interview with a different person in the organization, just briefly covering a topic in 5 minutes or less? If you do it, if it's engaging and it's relevant for people, then it's just there's so many ways you can communicate with people. You know, you got to find out what's the right way and just offer them in a whole series of different ways. I mean, if your company is going to launch a new product, you're not just going to run newspaper ads or do a TV ad. You're going to come up with a communication strategy that involves so many different means. And so I do think a lot of times with compliance, it's people get trapped in the mindset of, well, this is the way we should do it, or, you know, other companies are doing it this way, so we have to do that. And so that doesn't make sense, right? Well, what is going to make sense for you, for your organization? And then kind of using those different means of communication.
Yeah, I love it, man. So let's wrap up with talking about your Leading with Integrity Awards. It's something that we've talked about as we talk about, you know, communication campaigns and obviously Compliance Week and just trying to change from just a code of conduct to a culture of compliance. Talk to me about how that went over and how you kind of tied that into the leadership panel.
Yeah, so this was our first year running this. And so it was our Leading with Integrity Awards, kind of recognizing that supervisors, managers, and leaders, they play such a key role, like you're saying, Gio, in building and sustaining that culture of compliance. So how can we recognize some of those managers and leaders who are just, they're doing everything we would hope they would do, and they're doing more.
Yeah.
And so it was a way for us to recognize, you know, 5 different leaders from and across the entire Americas, some people from our corporate office, people from manufacturing and other locations, and just a way to, you know, recognize them. And so the way we set this up was, it wasn't the compliance team that came up with the short list. I mean, we are a 50,000 person company in the Americas. I don't know everyone in the organization, which is probably not a surprise, but, you know, we let our teammates nominate other people. And so that was great because I, you know, some of the people I knew, some of the people on the list I knew, but I was like, I didn't know that side to them, that they were so engaged in compliance. Cool. And then there were some other people that I'd never heard of before. And it's like, these people are doing such great work. And so I think when you look at, you know, the regulator expectations, there's got to be consequences, there's got to be incentives. And so it was a great, and I think a very cost-effective way for us to recognize, you know, 5 just tremendous individuals who are doing so much to build and sustain that culture of compliance. And so we tied this into our CEO panel by at the end of the panel discussion, you know, we announced the 5 winners. I think it's nice for people that you get recognized, you know, you get a trophy, and we sent the person, each of the winners, an email, copied their boss, and copied our global general counsel. But to hear on a call with almost 1,100 people, the CEO or our external director just announced my name, but did so like as a good example, I think has like a huge and profound impact, not only on the winners, but other people in your organization about this matters. This is something that we're willing to recognize. And this is something we're willing to celebrate as well. So it had, I think, a great impact. That was another one. We're like, how is this going to go over? Are people going to engage with this? But we had several hundred nominations. So really made, we had 3 people from our law department who kind of whittled down the group to about 25 nominees, and then we had a cross-functional panel of leaders who selected the ultimate winners. So it was something we were incredibly proud of, really happy with it, and something we're definitely going to bring back next year. Just what a great thing to do, just to celebrate your people and what they're doing. There's got to be consequences when people do things wrong, but there should also be consequences when people do the right thing as well. And I think that also kind of really helps tie into, we're not just compliance being the department of no's, we're celebrating people, we're engaging with the entire organization and finding ways to celebrate people. So a lot of fun, and hopefully it was effective.
Yeah, it's cool, man. You know, one of the things I'm most excited about, you know, trying to figure out or help people figure it out is, you know, a lot of people talk about the tone at the top, but I think the transformation of the culture at scale happens when you get a mood at the middle. because you got to stay with the alliteration, right? But, you know, I think this is a great way to get a bunch of individual managers instead of, you know, an executive who manages, you know, 30,000 people, you know, get a manager who manages 15 or 50 people to say, hey, this is someone who lives this out, who is an example, who speaks up or leads with integrity. It's a great way to kind of scale that out. And there's a lot of behavioral psychology in that public recognition. To your point, it doesn't cost that much. And it starts building bonds within your culture, within your internal community of like, hey, you know what? We're kind of defined by what we celebrate. And when you celebrate that, people say, hey, you know what? I'd like to get recognized by the CEO. I want a little trophy or, you know, I mean, even if they don't know, they're like, oh, well, that's pretty cool. Good for him. And it builds this into a broader conversation instead of just you should do this or you shouldn't do this. Hey, you know what? This is something that everyone cares about and it's good for everyone.
Yeah. And I think it helps you personify the behaviors you're looking for, right? It's, you know, now that you know this person, you know what they've done. And also as we're celebrating them, we can call out, you know, this person won an award because, you know, they use our, you know, we put together our compliance tip of the month, a very short practical tip. It is exactly what you're trying to cover here. Is like the, how do you get the mood in the middle, get them talking about it. And so there's different ways in which you can, you know, celebrate your people, encourage people, here's the desired behaviors. And also, you know, here's some of the different resources that we make available to try and make life as easy as possible for supervisors and managers. But yeah, I think it's you know, you do need that tone at the top, but you also need, you know, the managers of people of that small group. How do I take that message, cascade it down, and do so in a way that's going to be meaningful for my team, and really kind of tailored for them? So I do think it's something many, many companies struggle with, but it's something, if you truly want to have a culture of compliance, you've got to spread that culture throughout the entire organization, and your supervisors, your managers, they really are key to that. Starts with the top, but then they've got to be engaged and on board for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome, man, because it definitely can't stop at the top, right? You can't have just the top four people care about it and, you know, the other 2,000 or 80,000 not care about it.
Right.
That's cool, man. Well, I'd love to hear if you want to leave us with anything or you know, kind of tell people how to get in touch with you. But this has been a great conversation, Adam. I really appreciate you. First of all, I appreciate the way that you have intentionally and thoughtfully engaged with your team at Bridgestone to really, you know, build a strong compliance program, do a great compliance week and put on some of these events. It's a great example for us. And I love that you did it. And, you know, obviously I love that you came on our podcast today. Thanks for joining us on the Ethics Experts to talk about some of the things that, you know, not just worked for your compliance week, but it seems like these are principles that are used by your team throughout the year to engage employees, get that tone at the top, mood at the middle, and really just, you know, spread a culture of compliance and ethics around the whole organization. So good on you, man.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me on. It's been so much fun talking about this. And certainly I enjoy talking about this. If I can ever be of help to anyone else, probably LinkedIn's the best way to connect, but really appreciate and great conversation around making compliance fun and just the team that it takes to drive a compliance program. So thanks again, Gio. Really appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Well, it's been a pleasure hosting you today. Maybe, you know, if you're up for it, I'd love to, you know, you got about 345 days until your next compliance week. So maybe we can have you on next year and we can do a redo and hear how the next round goes, huh?
I hope so. That'd be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. And thank you everyone for listening. This has been the Ethics Experts with Giovanni Gallo and our guest, Adam Balfour. Everyone stay safe out there and we'll see you next time.